What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
This is Morningstar Daily with Law and Disorder. On with us this morning is Conahus Manuel. Conahus, can you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, my name is Conahus Manuel, and I'm from the Secwepemc and the Tanakan Nations in so-called British Columbia, Canada. I'm with the organization and movement Tiny House Warriors, where we've been battling with the extreme oil coming from the Alberta-Canadian tar sands through our territory. This oil is extreme oil, tar sands oil, and it's right now en route to California through the super tankers. So it's a big energy oil project that we are battling right now, and we're looking for all allies and support and keep eyes on what's happening in so-called Canada.
And when you mentioned that it's en route to California, you mean specifically with the Tiny House Warriors movement that you have founded, that the oil is en route to Richmond, California?
Yes, we're fighting, and we've been fighting against the Alberta tar sands oil coming from Alberta, Canada. This is some of the most toxic crude oil. It's bitumen, and they dilute it to put it through the pipes. The pipeline from Alberta to Burnaby, British Columbia, is around 1,152 kilometers, and they're loading massive super tankers now, since the pipeline is complete and they're pumping around 80% capacity right now. They're filling massive super tankers, 890,000 barrels per day of this bitumen, into these super tankers destined to oil refineries in and around Richmond and the Bay Area there. We're trying to bring as much attention and just really being runners to bring this message and warning to all of the people along this route, because so much people, specifically the indigenous people who are dependent on the salmon and all of the seafood and fisheries from the sea, because I know that we all indigenous people all the way California, Oregon, Washington, all the way BC, all the way up to Alaska, we're so dependent on the salmon. It's the lifeblood of our people, and it's our main economy and sustenance for our people.
Conahus, thank you for sharing your introduction and connection to the lands, waters, and people. As someone who embodies traditional teachings and resistance, how do you feel with the recent news of Justin Trudeau's resignation? How will that impact the Indigenous movements that continue to defend our homelands?
Well, right now I feel that Canada, both Canada and the U.S., have been doing business as usual and never taking into account that Indigenous people actually have rights and title to the territories in which they're occupying, that Indigenous people, there's minimal standards for these colonial states to abide by, including getting the free, prior, informed consent of Indigenous peoples before they push projects like pipelines and tankers through our lands and our waters. And so with Justin Trudeau's resignation, I really feel it's linked to the ongoing theft of our resources and land in so-called Canada. We hear that, you know, the so-called President Trump that's coming in is threatening, you know, to charge and put high tariffs on Canadian goods. Still, those Canadian goods have never been settled, and they've never been, we've never been compensated for any goods that are being taken out of Canada, including the theft of the Alberta tar sands oil. And we, Indigenous people, have never been put into the calculations, into the financial statements, including the risks and uncertainty that we bring to all of these financial investments that are coming into Canada or leaving and exporting out of Canada. So, like, I really believe that this just the early resignation of Trudeau is really linked to the continued theft of our lands and our resources. Since prior to that, the finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, also surprisingly fired herself, you know, and so she's the one that was the one announcing the pipeline purchase and all of the big expenditures that were coming out of the pipeline, which pretty well ballooned to $34 billion for Canadians, the cost of this pipeline. It's big business because the world's wars are fought over oil. And this is not excluded, this big Alberta tar sands extreme oil. They want to mine the size of Texas. This is really important because, you know, most of Canadian oil is essential to the U.S. Economy, you know, the domestic energy supply. So what does that mean for you know, so-called Canada and the U.S. when they're talking about stolen resources? Well, Indigenous people need to get organized. Indigenous people need to continue to make a lot of noise. And like we did before, and we shut down Canada through a strategic, organized protest of Indigenous peoples and our allies straight from the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic, right from coast to coast. We shut down Canada, costing billions and billions. And our economic friends haven't even been able to quantify yet the costs that our protest and the non-recognition of our title, of our territories and our treaty rights, what that is costing the Canadian government at this point. That's what I'm saying. We're not being put into the calculations. And we need them to know, we need the world to know that we are a risk to their investment until, you know, our title to our lands, our Aboriginal title and our rights are recognized and implemented into the land laws in so-called Canada. We're going to continue to fight and cause uncertainty and disruption to their economies.
Conahus, as someone who has embraced free, prior, and informed consent protocols, what accountability does the government bear for advancing projects that violated these principles? And what message would you send to the so-called future leaders about respecting these protocols?
Yeah, well, both government and corporations need to receive the free, prior, informed consent of Indigenous people before these projects go through, and they haven't. They haven't. And so what does that mean when they are brought to be sued in the high courts? What does that mean? We have some legal wins that just happened in Canada with the Anishinaabe people that the government or the company and the government were forced to pay back, you know, billions of dollars to the Indigenous peoples, compensating for timbers that were taken off of the territory. And then there was another win on the state side in Washington State, where the Swinomish tribe was given compensation for these companies bringing crude oil cars through their territory without their consent. And so, you know, more cases are going to come forward, and it's going to start to become precedent that they are going to need to, there has to be some type of financial compensation for what has already been taken off of our territory. And I hear from, you know, our relatives in Australia and different areas where they've been successful in suing government and corporations and receiving large amounts of money that enables them to be able to resist and to fight back with. And they say it's not an end-all, say-all for money deal for your land, because we don't believe in that. But what they've already taken will give us the resources needed to continue to fight, because our end goal is our complete territory and self-determination and really managing our own resources in our territory, because we know how to do that best. We know how to manage our the fish resource the best, because, you know, we want to ensure that it continues on for the next seven generations and the next seven from there and continue forever. So, you know, we are good economists, and we've been very, my my family always says, like, our Suquamish women were the best economists because they were the ones that were able to ensure that we had food to last us for, you know, generations to come. And so that's where our economy is based off of. It's based off of our relationship to the land. And Canada, and both Canada and the U.S., has been based off of business and extracting as much resources as possible to make them very wealthy superpowers in this world economy. But it's all off the blood and the bones and the backs of us Indigenous peoples that have never been compensated for it, not one single cent. And so what does it mean when they start to calculate us into the financial statements? We weren't included in the new NAFTA, you know, the new NAFTA that was pushed forth. You know, the Zapatista rebellion and the movement was, you know, formed off of the first NAFTA that they were trying to pass between, you know, the free trade agreement between Canada, the U.S. and Mexico. And now the second one got passed, you know, right without any type of Indigenous resistance. I mean, Tupac and Tonatiuh and Phoenix was, he was still alive at that point, and he was, you know, trying to make as much noise as possible over that USMCA. And now, and they didn't include an update Indigenous people whatsoever in that new trade agreement. Meanwhile, we had, you know, UNDRIP come down, and a lot of where we do have the free prior informed consent, we have a right to our own leadership, we have our own right to our own decision making as Indigenous people. And so, you know, we really have to have a voice. And I believe, like, my father, my late father, Arthur Manuel, was really leading in this movement with our economics, Indigenous economies, Indigenous network on economies and trade, where he was pushing submissions to NAFTA and the WTO to discuss Aboriginal title and rights, and that the government is not including us in these calculations, but we're actually the true title holders to the land. And so we are actually, like, the wealthy title holders of all of the lands of Canada and the U.S. So, yeah, we are very wealthy as Indigenous peoples, and our economy is very wealthy. And we need to step up. And, you know, they've never let us have a fair share into our resources, but we have to. And the precedent is coming, and it's there already. So, you know, we are very powerful as Indigenous people. Our voice is very strong, and we need to continue to organize. Justin Trudeau is just one white guy, and he's going to be replaced probably by another white guy in Canada. And it's just going to continue in this colonial regime in Canada if we don't stand up. We have to continue to pick fights with Canada always in order for us to be heard.
Thank you for sharing all of that. And yes, we remember your late father, Arthur Emanuel, and all of his work, and continue to study his writings. Kanahus, what is your vision for the future of Indigenous sovereignty and self-determination? And how can we honor the sacrifices of those who came before us, including your father, Arthur Emanuel, and grandfather, Grand Chief George Emanuel, in this fight?
Well, for me, you know, my leaders, my political leaders, my leaders in my family has been my father, my late father, Arthur Emanuel, and my late grandfather, George Emanuel. And my father, he would always say, just keep it simple. Don't try to cloud what we're doing with a whole bunch of other fancy words and stuff. We're fighting for land and self-determination. It's very clear. And so I think that by keeping it very simple like that, we're fighting for land and self-determination, then we know, you know, in our own skill set, in our own family, you know, skill sets that we have, where our energy is best put at. I mean, I have people in my family that are like language teachers that say, I'm full out just committed to keeping our language from the brink of extinction. And that's their fight and contribution to the fight for land and self-determination, because we need language in order to claim land, to claim territory, place names, our governance laws and structures that are all in our language, etc. And some are like, they want to work on the food sovereignty and the land policies, you know. And so there's lots of different people and their skill sets in our territories and our nations that are going to be crucial and necessary in us building up our self-determination plans. And what does that look like for the future, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? You know, city planning and, you know, the colonials are planning 100 years, 200, 300 years in advance. So what does that mean when we're saying self-determination plans for people? We have to start to organize that way, including managing and managing our territories. Like my father would say, okay, what if they give the land back tomorrow? How are you going to manage all this land, and they have mines there and they have this fish farms over there? How are you going to do that now? Like, we need the skill sets in place, because right now, and we need to start acting like it's our, and asserting that it's our nation's now, because he would say there's somebody from the band office that's going to come in and they're going to say, oh, I'll show you. This is how you manage your territories. And it's going to fit right into what the province mandate and the federal feds mandate, which is just still stealing resources and leaving us the most poor on our own land. So the self-determination plans are really important. And that's going to come with gathering and meeting with our people, grassroots, in our communities, on the ground, and working from the ground up approach with our people. And it's going to be hard work, but that's what they did when they colonized us and they tried to genocide us out. They destroyed a lot of our governance structures and our decision making and a lot of the way that we organize. But it's going to take a lot of work. Every day is going to be hard work. Like, we have a lot of people in our family, but one of them said, it's going to even be hard work being the best sister, mother, auntie, because they even tried to destroy that, our family systems, because it was such important to our governance structure. So really decolonizing and just bringing our family structures back, and our decision-making, our self-determination plans, not just within our nation issue. If you just could only do it within your family, then start doing it within your family. But we're going to have to do it. Start health, housing, you know, whatever it may be, that for our self-determination plans, it's crucial now.
Kanahus, I have one last question for you before we have to wrap up here. The missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls crisis remains a national tragedy. How do you think these next actions in addressing this crisis, and what specific actions would you demand in these incoming governments, these incoming change in regimes that are incoming?
Murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls and boys and men peoples in Canada is at like all out high. You just look through your social media feeds and you're going to see all the, you know, thousands of missing posters of all these young people, young and old, right across the country. It's scary because we come from really isolated communities, and some of them don't have the resources to look for their loved ones. But, you know, we faced off with this during our fight with the Trans Mountain Pipeline, because we were facing off with a large 1,000-man camp, where these man camps are known to be linked to the increased, you know, violence against women and the MMIW crisis. But right now, we do need more resources on the ground. There's not enough resources on the ground to be able to assist the families in searching for their loved ones. So there's so much other experts, organizations out there that have put out recommendations for the government, but always hearing that none of them has ever been, you know, pushed forth on the ground with the people. So yeah, our people need to continue to get support and resources for our loved ones. It's just a tragedy all over. We see the red dresses hanging up in some of the most isolated places along our highways, because in Canada, you know, the majority of the people are in the populated centers, but the rest of Canada and all across is very isolated. And police and RCMP are still very racist. It's not the racism is still very high and visible in Canada. So Yeah, we're still in need of so much resources and support for our women and the missing.
Thank you so much for spending your time with us this morning. We've been speaking with Kanahus Manuel, founder of the Tiny House Warriors movement and founder of so many movements. Thank you so much for being with us, and we look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world for all of us to thrive in. That's it for this episode, fam. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programming is funded exclusively by listeners. If you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. Remember, we all we got.